The book of Exodus records the historic moment when God ordered Moses to lead his people out of Egypt. As the Israelites fled from captivity, they came to the shores of the Red Sea. With deep water ahead and the Egyptian army behind, the Israelites were trapped. Or so it seemed. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll recounts this legendary moment, and he helps us understand the timeless lessons for anyone who's caught in such a dilemma. We're in Exodus chapter 14. Chuck titled his message, Between the Devil and the Deep Red Sea.
God said, go to Baal Zephon. It was the most, militarily, it was the most vulnerable spot to be in. But you see, Moses had walked with God long enough to know that even though something seemed foolish, he wasn't to question it. And God was gracious enough to say to Moses, look, I've got a plan that is profound. Pharaoh is going to think, as he gets word by the grapevine, as you wander back and forth, that you're aimlessly wandering in the desert. And he'll think, they're going up north to Baal Zephon. I'll trap them there. That's the trap that Pharaoh will fall into. You see, God had it all arranged because the Lord wanted to fight the battle for the Hebrews. Look at chapter 14, verse 5. Now the plot begins to thicken. Exactly as God predicted, Pharaoh reacted. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his servants had a change of heart toward the people. And they said, what is this we have done that we have let Israel go from serving us? So he made his chariot ready and took his people with him. And he took 600 select chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he chased after the sons of Israel as the sons of Israel were going out boldly. That's an interesting phrase, by the way. They start going north thinking, God is in this. This is going to be a great experience. They went out boldly toward Baal Zephon. Verse 9. Then the Egyptians chased after them with all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh. You can just hear them thundering in your mind. Here they come, his horsemen and his army. And they overtook them camping by the sea in front of Baal Zephon. So panic strikes. Now listen to verse 10 through verse 12 with a great deal of practical insight. You will almost hear your testimony. Verse 10. As Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. That's the understatement of the chapter, by the way. They were scared to death when they saw the Egyptians. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. That's the first time you read of the people of Israel in mass crying out to God. By the way, isn't it remarkable what a predicament will do to your independent spirit? Isn't it remarkable you walk along with real swagger and you strut your way through life like a human peacock until suddenly you come to the end of the rope and you begin to realize, hey, I'm in a jam. And you look up and you cry out. We're not told what they said, but after they had cried out to God in human form, they began to blame somebody else. And if you're honest with yourself, that's usually the way you handle a predicament. The first response, if you're really in touch with God, is to cry out. And the second response is to, after a while, when relief hasn't come, you begin to look to someone to blame. And so they naturally picked the preacher. Verse 11. Then they said to Moses, Is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Now listen to verse 12. We told you so. Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? or it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. We would rather be in safety as slaves than to be free men in danger. That's a human perspective, isn't it? Why, let me assure you before I go any further that predicaments are, humanly speaking, terrible experiences. You absolutely will question the very roots of your faith if you stay there long enough. And by and by, you'll begin to look to someone to blame. And usually, it'll be somebody in leadership. And you said, look, I took your counsel and I did what you said, and here I am at the end of the rope, and I've tied a knot, and I'm hanging on, and I'm dangling, and there is no bottom if I fall. And you're the reason I did that. Well, I'm extremely impressed with Moses' response. By the way, this is a good place to pause and say, there is a phrase I hear at times, and it just makes me cringe because people say it comes from the Bible, but it doesn't. The phrase is, God helps those, what? Who help themselves. That is not biblical. That's from the pit. Okay? God helps the helpless. As long as you're helping yourself, you don't need God. It's when you come to the end of your rope and there is nothing left. You say, God, help me. God says, I will. Let go. You say, is there anybody else up there that can help me? That's the normal human response. God wants you to let go. He wants you to fall. That's all part of his plan. That's why Moses says to the people, verse 13, do not fear. Can you believe that counsel? Hey, the Egyptians around the corner, man. You're saying, don't fear. What's the matter with you, Moses? You need a change in your prescription, man. You can't even see them. No, Moses says, I see them, but I'm saying to you, don't fear. And furthermore, his second piece of counsel is stand still and watch. That's the third piece. Look at verse 13. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord. Okay, counsel number one, don't be afraid. Counsel number two, stand still. Counsel number three, watch. Counsel number four, verse 14, the Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. Be quiet. That's your counsel. There's a prescription for people who are in a predicament. Don't be afraid. Stand still. Watch God come through. Quit talking. The hardest is the fourth. Because we got to tell everybody we know what a predicament we're in. God doesn't need to be informed. He knows the predicament and he is waiting for you to wait. Now I'm ready to tell you something I've held back from you all evening. It is so good. I've just had to wait for this moment to lay it on you. See the word Baal Zephon? We've come across it on the map and we've seen it earlier in the passage. Zephon is from a verb, zaphan, which means hidden treasure. Isn't that good? Hidden treasure. When you are in the cul-de-sac, led by God to that tight place, it is there you will discover some hidden treasure designed just for you. That's why Moses said, look, let's stand still. There's some hidden treasure here. We'll miss if we run. You know the human response to a panic? First of all, is to be afraid. Second, to run. Third, fight. Fourth, tell everybody. God's counsel is just the opposite. Don't be afraid. Stand still. Watch him work. Shut up. And he does it. He takes over. But I say again, it is 190 degrees opposite the human way to handle it. And therefore, the Lord just taps his foot, waiting for us to wait. Well, remarkable as it may seem, the Israelites did that very thing. They did what Moses said. And God came through. Look at what he did. Look at his protective hand. He did three things. Well, really four. Four things on behalf of the Israelites. First, he told Moses to go forward. Verse 15. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward." I love that. See that Red Sea, Moses? Yes, says Moses. Go, says God. Right, says Moses. Right through the sea. Now, the first thing God did was say to Moses, go forward. But in the meantime, as he got his troops together, God did something else. He moved the cloud from above them to behind them. Look at verse 16. No, it's verse 19. The angel of God, who had been going before the camp of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them. You know why? Well, the passage goes on to describe why. Verse 20, it came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel. And there was the cloud along with the darkness, yet it gave light at night. Thus the one did not come near the other all night. What's that saying? It's saying the cloud moved from before them to behind them. That's where the Egyptians were, except this great massive cloud formation dropped from heaven to earth. And it just blocked the Egyptians' eyesight. And I think there's another benefit. It kept the Hebrews from staring back, you know, and quaking with fear. It just blocked the one from the other so that they could listen to God. Now, the third thing God did, he opened the path through the sea. Verse 21. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And the Lord swept the sea back by a strong east wind all night and turned the sea into dry land, so the waters were divided. I think Cecil B. DeMille has missed it somewhat in his presentation, so let's clarify him, his attempt at making it picturesque. Do you know why the wind blew all night? Do you realize that the waters didn't suddenly part and they rushed in? Why, they'd have been in a bog in a matter of a very few yards. Any sea that has been, any riverbed that has been recently filled with water is a bog for a number of days, if not weeks. It takes time to dry it up. That's why the east wind came. The waves were pushed back and the sea became great massive vertical walls on either side. And then that east wind just bore down on that land and just dried it up. All night it just poured over the land. I think we've missed the picture of the wind. You picture the Israelites as they stood back and that divine wind just swished down into that riverbed and dried it out just like dust. Got it all ready for the Israelites. So once God took his hand off that wind, then they moved right in. That's what it says. The water was like walls to them on the right and on their left. Now verse 23. Then the Egyptians took up the pursuit. See, they were just so gullible, they fell right into the trap. They thought, man, if they can walk across the sea, we can too. So there they went. Pharaoh's horses, chariots, and the horsemen went in after them into the midst of the sea. Came about at the morning watch, that's long before daybreak, that the Lord looked down on the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and the cloud and brought the army of the Egyptians into confusion. That's the fourth thing God did. First, he told Moses to go forward. Second, he blocked the vision of the Egyptians for a period of time. Third, he opened the path through the sea. And fourth, he brought confusion to the Egyptians. Look at what happened. It's a remarkable scene. He caused their chariot wheels to swerve. He made them drive with difficulty. So the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from Israel. The Lord is fighting for them against the Egyptians." Remember what the Lord said? They're going to know I'm the Lord when this is over. The Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so the waters may come back over the Egyptians, over their chariots and their horsemen." Moses did that. He stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal state at daybreak, except it was filled with bodies. The Egyptians, when they were fleeing, went right into it. The Lord said, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. What a remarkable scene. Verse 29, the sons of Israel walked on dry land through the midst of the sea, and the waters were like a wall to them on their right and on their left. You know what I see? I see the walls of water pushed back and the Israelites moving into it. Just at the time they're getting across, then the Egyptians come and there's a space in between. And just as the Israelites are cleared, the riverbed is full of Egyptians. And God said to Moses, "Do your thing with the stick, Moses. Bring the water back." And he did. And the waters rushed in, and suddenly there was a massive massacre. Not a soul lived through it. You notice verse 30? They took a walk along the seashore, and it says the Israel that day was saved from the hand of the Egyptians, and they saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Please notice, it doesn't ever say they killed him, because they didn't. It doesn't even say they defended themselves, because they didn't. It doesn't even say they fought, because they didn't. They waited, and they walked through, and then they watched God work. Period. And he did. Isn't it remarkable what he can do without our help? It's just incredible sometimes. You just feel like, well, my company needs me so much, and my church needs me, and my family needs me. God must need me. No, he doesn't. He really can manage without you. Remarkable though it may seem. As a matter of fact, verse 31 describes the people as standing in awe. It says, when they saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, they feared the Lord, they believed in the Lord, and they believed in his servant Moses. In that order, there was an awesome silence. There was a dignity that spread over that shoreline when they saw what God had done. And they gave God glory. And they looked at Moses from a whole new light. Historians and unbelieving archaeologists have helped us a lot with this story. You might be interested to know. As a matter of fact, we have come to see in these days of archaeological discoveries from obelisks and other archaeological finds that the Egyptians did not frequent this place for 17 long years after this miraculous experience. They held it in dignity. As a matter of fact, they did not attempt to regroup their ascendancy over Syria for 22 years after this. Not until the 23rd year did they even come to a serious place of reestablishing their authority in this land of western Syria. They got the message back home that God had visited the Red Sea. Romans 15:4 is a verse you should mark if you haven't marked it yet. It's one of the best New Testament verses on the value of the Old Testament. You that are a little hesitant to get into the Old Testament, or you that are teaching from the Old Testament, you should point out to your students verse 4 of chapter 15 of Romans. For whatever was written in earlier times, that's Exodus 14. was written for our instruction. That's today. That through perseverance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. Marvelous verse. God put truths into the Old Testament so that we in this era of grace, the last days, might draw some timeless, profound lessons for now.
As you listen to Insight for Living, you'll notice you always hear the integrating of Old Testament and New Testament teaching. And that's the way that God designed both books to work in harmony in telling His story. We're midway through a message from Chuck Swindoll, and he's teaching from Exodus chapter 14. It's titled, Between the Devil and the Deep Red Sea. Keep listening because Chuck wants you to meet a colleague of ours here at Insight for Living, and that's coming up in just a moment. First, I want to remind you that in addition to this daily teaching series, Chuck has written a full-length book on the life of Moses. It's called Moses, A Man of Selfless Dedication. It's 20 chapters long, and it's written in the engaging style you've come to expect from Chuck Swindoll. Plus, we've prepared a brand new Bible study workbook for you. This resource is part of our Searching the Scriptures Bible Studies. It's a spiral-bound workbook or journal of sorts, which makes it perfect for jotting down personal notes and observations. Many of our listeners are choosing to use this Bible study in a small group at church, and it's perfect in a classroom setting as well. One more thing, this classic study on Moses was recorded several decades ago, and we've transferred the 20 sermons onto CD. This collection of CDs is called Moses, A Man of Selfless Dedication. To purchase any or all of these helpful resources, just call us at 800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org/store. Chuck, go right ahead.
Today you're going to be able to meet Carmen Montgomery, who has been with us 23 years. Can it be that long? Absolutely. And she has worked in our international department because she is herself bilingual and especially gifted in the area of Spanish. So welcome. We're glad to have you today. Thank you for coming. Share with us about whatever is on your heart.
Yes, thank you. Well, as I was mentioning a few seconds ago, Spanish is probably number one or number two language spoken in the world. And when a lot of people think about ministering to the Spanish people, especially here in the U.S., we think about what can we do outside of this country? But in reality, 20% of our population in the U.S. is Hispanic. So I don't think we need to think about what can we do outside the country, but rather what can we do with the Hispanics we have in our country? Because a lot of these Hispanics are first-generation Hispanics. So they left their country to seek a better life and now are here, adapted to our culture, our language. But they still keep that heartbeat of really who they are in their home, their native tongue, or like we like to say in international, just their love language. Because whatever comes from the heart is really what is special to you. And I think in Spanish ministries, we focus on what we can do with our listeners here in the U.S. And one of the resources that we are so thrilled to have is the STS workbook. As you know, we take everything that's in English, we translate it into Spanish. So we don't recreate the wheel. We use what's already done. And these STS binders are just an amazing tool to put on paper, to give to our people and teach them how to dig into the word. Not just skim over it, but really study it, like you have taught us. Observe it, interpret it, correlate it, apply it.
Good for you. That's
and that's
right.
How do we do that? And how do we take a Bible passage and study all that? So these STS workbooks are a tool that we will start promoting in churches, as well as just to our listening audience, to be able to take home, do as a personal Bible study, or just do as a small group to be able to just learn what God has in store for them just by opening the Bible.
I can tell by the way you say that, Carmen, that you still are excited about it.
Very much
and,
so.
And you've informed us today of a statistic I was not aware of, that 20% of our population is Hispanic. That's marvelous. And to you folks who are Hispanic, and to all the rest of us in all different languages from all different backgrounds, let me say to each one of you, thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for your gifts. Those gifts make it possible for us to reach the Hispanics and others around this world. And that's happening right now, this very day. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
We are indeed very grateful for you. Your gift empowers us to reach Spanish-speaking people here in North America and around the world with the Bible teaching of Chuck Swindoll. To make a much-needed donation today, here's our address. It's Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas, 75034. By the way, you heard Carmen refer to the STS workbooks. That's our Searching the Scriptures Bible studies, printed in both English and Spanish. Tell a friend about these resources, or you can purchase copies to give away at Christmas. To speak with one of our friendly ministry reps, just call 800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer, inviting you to join us when Chuck Swindoll continues to describe what God can do without our help. Tomorrow on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Between the Devil and the Deep Red Sea, was copyrighted in 1975, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.